Top Stuff, the Rock Antenna Heavy Metal Podcast. Enjoy exclusive interviews with your favorite metalheads. Please welcome.
There we go. It's so funny because every time you come on this app, every person's connection has something on or off or off or on. My manager will probably get mad, but they made this background that has the Sabotage logo.
Yeah.
And the problem with it, when you move, it takes your head away, you know, and it, like, it's...
Yeah, I know, I know.
I'm only home for about 2 more weeks before I got to leave for Florida to start Sabotage rehearsals for South America.
There you go. So,
yeah.
I was fortunate enough to be at Wacken in 2015, where you guys played. And I saw that, and I was wondering, I felt like, well, it's going to be another couple of months till I'm going to see you guys back again. Now, it's been a couple of hundred months to be able to see you guys.
Yeah, quickly. I mean...
What did you guys take so long? And was it that difficult to get this whole family together again in this constellation?
Well, the bottom line is Paul O'Neill passed away in 2017. Yeah. You know, and I don't think... You know, when you deal with people in your life, there's not you ever expect anybody to die, but there's always somebody you always figure is going to be there, you know, till the very end. I mean, when I got the phone call that Paul had passed, it hit me like a freight train. You know, I still to this day, sometimes don't even want to, cause I do interviews and I talk to people in a present tense with him. Like he's still making decisions and doing the things now. It, you know, he was a father figure. He was my mentor. He was our boss. But, you know, when he passed, it took us a while to get back on track with TSO. You know, just, you know, we toured that year, but I'm just saying in general to screw our heads on straight and keep his legacy alive. And he was the one who was really trying to speak to us about getting Sabotage going again. And then unfortunately COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so COVID took away 2020 into 2021. And then John Oliva had done some speaking with Rock Hard in Greece and mentioned that we were going to be working on a record. And then John had some problems that kind of sidelined things. And I think during his interview, he'd spoken to with the magazine in Greece, the internet channeled that information, and then I started getting phone calls from festivals and agencies and our management and other guys in the band, and you blink your eyes and 10 years went by, you know, like that, like you mentioned those months. But when the management called me last year and said, hey, you know, we want to speak about Sabotage with a conference call, I had no idea what they wanted to say or what it was going to be. And mm-hmm. when you know, Adam and Kenny said to me, you guys want to do some shows, I almost started crying. You know, it was just like, I've been waiting for that for a long time. Everybody knows how not just important that Sabotage is to me, but how important the European fans are, you know, is how close a relationship that that Sabotage had with many of the countries there. Germany, I mean, we played more German cities, I think, than we have in you know, most states and places in America. We had a really great relationship with people over there. And I miss the people. I miss the fans. I miss the history, the culture, the, you know, just the whole thing. A part of my life was gone. I love TSO. It's like the gig is a blessing. You know, we have a show in America that plays for 1 million people a year, and it's the biggest rock and roll show that's ever been in an arena in the States. It's crazy. And it's so much fun to do that. But when you had that space in between months of the year, especially after Paul passed, we started playing TSO away from the winter. But when Paul passed, it kind of sidelined that too. So there's just a lot of times where you would see the festivals, or say I would fill in as a guest for Doro. I did her 40th anniversary 2 years ago when I was at Wacken. And you know, there's a difference between being a guest there and, you know, I had my own little cube with my name on it, then looking at the schedule and seeing Sabotage and knowing that later on in that day, you know, when that band starts, I'm not waiting to go out and play a couple songs. I'm going out. You know, it's just such a huge part of me, you know, and life gets a lot of twists and turns, you know, like I mentioned with what was going on with me at home right now. And I think you need balance in your life to get through the good and the bad. Yeah. And I think there's a proper amount of good that needs to be there to have the bad and the other side be balanced out. You know, the world's crazy now. And Sabotage coming back into my life has given me a peace of mind that is allowing me to focus on, you know, do the laser sharp focusing on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm not focusing on everything else. I'm not concentrating energy on the negative. You know, if there's something negative, I focus on that. I get it out of the way. You know, if there's something that I need to take care of, but I don't pay attention to the rest of the world right now. I'm so excited about what it is that's coming up. And I think that fulfillment of me personally as a musician and a person is exactly what I needed for the time we're in right now. And I can't wait to get on stage and show the fans exactly how important this is to me and how, you know, the band is going to show how important it is to us that everybody's seems pretty excited to see us coming back again.
It is. They are. We are. I've talked to a lot of people who go like, I'm going to every show.
I know that. I know people actually, I had mentioned about the situation at home, and the doctor at the hospital was actually from Lebanon, and he was a Sabotage fan. So it's and he said he wanted to fly to Saloniki to see us.
All the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And I've spoken to people that are flying over there and have multiple one. They're trying to figure out which map they want of the time over there. I mean, we were blown away. We didn't know what to expect when we released headline shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we saw, I got the phone call that Oberhausen was sold out. It was like pretty quickly. I was like, we're still 7 months away from the show. It was like, and that's festival season too. So I'm going, wow, people are scheduling us around their festival work. And you know, and the same thing happened in Munich. I don't want that. I don't want you. And in Munich, I should have that off. But, you know, it's been great. And we're really excited to not only see the fans that used to see us, but there's been 20 plus years since we toured Germany.
Yeah.
You know, and the rest of the world. So somebody who's 20 right now was not there. So I'm excited to see the younger metal fans that message me and comment on our posts and say that they're, you know, excited to see. I know how many people around the world tell me, like, that I was doing an interview with a gentleman in France about Hellfest, and he has said, you guys are bigger now than ever. And it's so crazy to me because we haven't been there in 20 years. But when I looked at what Pantera had done, you know, like, there was so many kids in that audience that obviously were not alive when Vinny and Dime were alive. Right. And you see them up there singing every word to every song. And to them, they're seeing Pantera for the first time. They're able to shut their eyes and look at the videos and pictures and imagine what it would have been like seeing them. And that's pretty much the way we're going to do it here. I mean, between me, Johnny, Zach, Alan, Jeff, we have 170 years of Sabotage in us. You know, and John, when John's health is enough for him to be able to do the flying and stuff like that, he'll be there too. We're all still here. And, you know, before we blink our eyes and another 10 years goes by, we figured it was the perfect time when management said, you guys want to go? We're like, let's go. And
you got to tell me one thing. Is there a new record coming? It's just happening.
It's funny. John did that. Like I said, John did that interview. We've had enough music to do a new record for a while. And John continues writing. We continue writing. There's more and more. We're going to get a record done. You know, that is going to happen. If the funny thing is, I believe there's probably enough for at least two records now. John did his interview and said it was going to be the last record, and he said the curtain call. And I made Zach laugh yesterday in an interview. I said, I think it's going to be the first last record. It'll be how everybody has their first farewell tour. It's like, this will be our first last record. But the difference between a record and a farewell tour is like you at least get all new music on the new record. So if it's a second last record, it won't be the same as the last one. So people will at least feel like they're getting getting their money taken by that. But yeah, I think that when he said the curtain call, I'm like, is the curtain going up or down? You know, because for me right now, by the way we are when we're together, it feels like the curtain's going up. You know, and by when I've talked to everybody, we want to go and play, you know, and I think it's up to us. We got to get out there and kick some butt, you know, and show the fans that, you know, we haven't lost a beat since we played last. I mean, the good thing for us is with everybody in this band, we've been on the road for 25 tours straight, more than 25 years, but with TSO. And, you know, we are still in really good playing shape. Our musicianship is improving with our age. And I think that we're going to have the opportunity to give everybody a really good live Sabotage, you know, when we go. I mean, and that's the most important thing is to, like I said, to be able to have those fans that had seen us before, you know, shut their eyes and listen and look and watch and just get a feeling of what it's like to see a Sabotage concert. That music's very special. You know, Paul O'Neill wrote some lyrics that connect fans in a way that, I've never seen with any other band, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's songs that, like, Doro has, like, Forever, that pulls the fans together all around the world like that. Paul had that in so many different songs. You know, Believe Not What You See, All That I Bleed, you know, Alone You Breathe. It's like you go through those songs. He was constantly pulling together people like that, constantly putting in the human element. Where any one of those songs could have been written about you and your friends or your neighbor or your parents or your grandparents. And that's, I think, the really special thing about Paul. He had told me that, you know, anybody could write a song about a car or a girl, but it takes something really special to write a song about that will change people's lives. Yeah. And that's what I noticed when we first came back to Europe in 96 and we started playing and we were doing festivals and shows. The fans would show up from South America, from Egypt, from all these different places, telling me how Sabotage changed their life, how Believe saved their life and things like that. And then it started to really sink in. And especially when we had Dead Men Are Dead at, you know, following the war that it was written about. And, you know, especially nowadays when the world seems to still be butting heads a lot in the wrong places, I think those songs and that message that Paul had and that and all the like I said, all those kinds of songs really makes Sabotage special. I think in a way that, you know, when you saw Freddie Mercury by himself in front of a stadium crowd, he was able to connect to every single one of those fans
mm-hmm.
together because of this, you know, what was in his heart and soul that came across through him, through his message and through the music. And I think that's the same thing that's always happened with Sabotage and the music that the Olivas and Paul had written and we all written for the fans. And, you know, it's like I said, something really special about Paul that translates to almost everybody, you know, if not everybody.
You know, the songs and the set list is going to be crucial on this tour because I heard, you know, fans expect to play you every note from every record that you've ever made, which is not going to happen. So how do you decide on the songs that you're going to be playing live?
Yeah, it's like you have a choice. You could do 30 seconds from every song. Here we go. Done. I told them not to let me do it because I would have a 5-hour set. I'm the worst person to ask. I like every song. So as soon as I think of a song, I'm like, that one should be there. So I just let everybody talk. I mean, I know we're asking the fans. We're looking at the obvious, you know, which songs does it seem like people are listening to on a daily basis. You're able to see that now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which you get a good idea of which ones you have to do. And, you know, with Zach singing everything, we have to be kind to him because he's going to be doing an awful lot of singing. And some of that stuff that was John on the recordings, it's not, you know, Zach's natural voice to be singing that. So we don't want to put too much pressure on him to have to do too much of that. So of course we want to go a little heavy on the things that Zach had sang, but we're still doing a lot of the classics. The good thing about Sabotage is all our title tracks seem to be one of the most popular songs from each record. So we're able to do it that way. And that helps when you're trying to make a decision instead of going, oh, we got to do the Edge of Thorns record. And imagine if Edge of Thorns was, you know, one of these really bizarre artsy kind of songs that really was, you know, then you had to pick one of the other 10, you know, which say if every song was one that everybody liked, at least Edge of Thorns is obviously one that they're going to want to hear, you know? So that helps us out in that way. I think that, the only record where you really don't pull straight to the title track with Sabotage, well, there's two actually, is Streets, because everybody tends to go right towards Believe or Jesus Saves. And then you look at Poets and Madmen, where was the only Sabotage record where we didn't have a title track.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's the rest of them, Haul Them Out, King, Power of the Night, Sirens, you know, Gutter Ballet, Handful of Rain, Wake of Magellan. It kind of like, it writes its own set list.
It's a track tour.
There's worse problems we could have. But yeah, like some of the ones kind of decide for themselves through that. And then, you know, you want to have a good variety. There's so many of the songs that had the counterpoint vocals in it where the multiple vocals were going. And, you know, that kind of thing. I just know that songs like Chance definitely had a marriage with the live crowds that was very special. And you just remember what worked and you try to put it all together. Of course, we have a festival set time and then a headlining set time. And we're getting together extra songs so we can maybe swap around the headline shows since there's only a few of them. Mm-hmm. Which will give more of a reason for people to have to see them all. I heard they did. But you know what was funny with that? Dora was always like that with her shows because she was so close to her fans. And if we did a set one night and one fan said they wanted to hear Fight for Rock or Metal Tango or something old the next night, she'd be sitting on the bus all day long. She'd be like, Chris, I don't know. I think we got to do Metal Tango. It would just get inside of her head that there might
be Doro. Yeah, I know.
I've 20 years with Doro. I have a pretty good Doro. I do a pretty good imitation of Holger too, or her manager, but I'll save that one for now. But I love Doro to death, but it's that same kind of thing. You know, you're going to run into people that want to hear something always. And you just try to make them all happy. Like I said, you don't do too many of the, you know, 10 songs that are all the same. And then, you know, they all start to repeat themselves. So you got to kind of pace it like you're making a record. When you have an album, you don't have 10 chances on a record. You know, you have one chance on the record. So when you're doing your live set, you're going to kind of be pacing it like that in many ways, you know, in little pieces, trying to put together little quarters. I think it's more the way that to say that that'll work, but there is so much music. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. The next, I have a question that actually, when I thought about it, I thought it could come over like a joke, but it's not meant as a joke in no reason. But do you actually recall how often you joined Sabotage and you left Sabotage in your life?
Well, here's the thing. I only joined and left once.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. Now, in the very beginning, I met Paul O'Neill when I was 17. That was back in 1986. And he was managing and producing a band called Heaven, which had the song Knocking on Heaven's Door. That was a big MTV song at that time. Their guitar player had left. due to fake ID, sorry, people, the drinking age got moved from 19 to 21 in New York. My brother was 19. I was able to use his ID to get into clubs. I wasn't drinking, but I was able to get to places I wouldn't have been able to get in. And I met this singer, and I had a cassette tape on me, and I knew he was looking for a guitar player, and I handed it to him, and I wound up getting that gig. Now, Paul was producing that band. We did some recording, but the work with Paul and Heaven fell apart. Paul started working with Mountain King. Now, Paul produced a huge sound on Hall of the Mountain King.
Yeah.
And he wanted to have the band to be able to do that live. They only had Chris as a guitar player. So it was really Paul's idea at first to have a guitar player come in, and he thought I would be perfect for it. And, you know, we butted heads on it. And eventually I got in and did that tour. And I wasn't an official member of the band. They'd asked me to join for Gutter Ballet. So that was really kind of like, it was my first time joining. I'd played with them in 87, 88. Well, yeah, I was 19. It was the first time I played. Now, I had a band with my brother at the time. And back then, you know, you kind of look like a band whore if you played with more than one band. You know, so my brother was really depressed and almost, I mean, I don't want to go too personal with it, but almost suicidal at that point in time because of the fact that my career was exploding with Sabotage and he was sitting and working a day job, and it really got to him. And I think my combination of being too young and stupid to figure things out the right way, I managed to leave Sabotage after Gutter, which never should have happened. I should have stayed and worked with my brother and still stayed for Streets, because then I would have been on that cover. But when John was out of the band after the Streets tour, me and him connected together immediately. This was within, you know, by the end of 92. So it was only like a year and a half that I was actually away from Sabotage. Then me and John did Dr. Butcher. And then in 93, his brother passed. So 94, he went on the road for Japan Live. 95, I went back into Sabotage, and I've been there ever since. Now, we never broke up.
Okay.
When we stopped playing in 2003, Sabotage never broke, or 2002, yeah, we never broke up. So that's the one thing that I think everybody always says when they said ex-Sabotage. No, I was still Chris Caffrey from Sabotage. Sabotage was, remember Austin Powers? He was like cryogenically frozen. It's like, that's what it was like. Here's Chris Caffrey. You go to the Ice Museum. Chris Caffrey at Sabotage. Frozen, like waiting from 2020, from 2003. And now they just freaking defrosted me. We're back at it. It's like I never left the band. The band never broke up. So technically there was just that one period of time, which, you know, I regret that for so many reasons, mainly because I lost those last years of Chris Oliva's life. You know, we were really good friends, and he gave me that opportunity to be a part of his band. That's why when I speak to people and they say, well, if John's not there, there's no original members. I'm like, aha. There was never a fifth member of Sabotage till me. So if you want to chronologically add Sabotage 1989, where it's when I joined for Gutter, because Gutter, that's when I joined, was 89. Since 89, I've been the original Chris Caffrey. So, and I make a damn good Chris Caffrey. I mean, I think I make the best one.
Yeah, Mike.
So you have that. Everybody has the original Chris Caffrey, because there was never a second guitar player in the band. So that particular position in Sabotage was something that was created by Paul and then given to me, for me, because of me. They probably wouldn't have taken anybody if they didn't like me. And it was because we got along so well and the band sounded the way it did, because me and Chris sounded very similar on rhythm guitar. So it opened up the world to him as a lead player when I was behind him as a rhythm player. And I always felt like I let him down. And it's a big reason why it was so important for me to go back into Sabotage. You know, I really felt that that was my home and I never should have left. I could have channeled my energy towards other bands, which I did with Dr. Butcher, but, you know, when John's brother died, John went back to working with Sabotage and used that as a huge release for the emotions he was in, not working with his brother and not having his brother anymore. So we kind of just all bonded together with Paul and kept the thing going. And, you know, like I said, I haven't walked away. I haven't walked away from Paul really since I, you know, other than that 1 year since I was 17. You know, everything that I've done in my life, I can attribute to being meeting Paul. And I always say there's one point in time in your life where your life is never the same again from that one moment in your life. And I have to admit that that would be when I met Paul O'Neill. Mm. You know, my life from there was like BP and AP before Paul and after Paul. I mean, it's like there was things changed and it's been that way ever since. And you know, I'm happy where I am. And I've had offers to go other places. I'm too lazy and tired to try to be anybody other than me.
No, hang on. You might be a lot of things, but you cannot be lazy and tired because I think, you know, apart from playing with Sabotage now, I mean, you still have TSO going probably, you know, towards the end of the year. So that must be like just exhausting. No matter how much fun this is going to be.
Yeah, no, I mean, I channel my energy. I take care of myself now. I'm not out hanging out with my friends in the bars. I go to the gym every day. I work hard. When I'm lazy and tired, I think it's like, it takes a lot of energy to construct something and to get it out there. And it also takes a lot of energy to combine yourself with people you don't know and to become a part completely of something else. You know, when I did things like touring with Doro, that was a blessing because I was able to go and get on stage with her and her band and just, you know, celebrate what she did. And that was fun. Yeah. There was no energy. That never made me tired. I would do that any second that she wants me to, whenever I'm available, just because I love Doro and what she has done. She's a legend and I'm always happy that, but if you were to go and you know, play with another band and it's just, I don't want to stand in a photo really to be in another band. I did a couple little things on the side here and there, but it never felt right. You know, this is being back with Sabotage active. It's just, like I said, that's that peace, that internal and musical and just everything, just you're at peace. And I think it makes it easier to find the energy sometimes when you're tired. Mm-hmm. It's like to get up and do the things that you might have been a little lazy on. I've been practicing my guitar now more than I have, I would say, in 30 years. And this rebirth of the Sabotage Live situation is the motivator for that, because A, I don't want to suck and B, I want to do it better than I ever have. I want to pay tribute to Chris and this music better than I ever had. And I think I've gotten a lot better as a player and a musician and a person. And I think that it just has inspired me. You know, I would pick up the guitar sometimes and it's kind of, everything was feeling the same. And I was doing solo records and making music, but now it's like I pick up my guitar and I'm getting excited about playing faster and stronger every day. And it's making me want to get up there. It's like, I know I got to get on stage before Richie Faulkner. It's like, that's not, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. He's he's a younger me on steroids. So I'm like, I got to go up there and kick some butt, man. So I'm ready for that situation. And I want to, you know, I got Al Petrelli on my side, probably one of the, if not the, I would say he's probably the best all around guitar player I've ever played with in my life. So I want to get up, make sure I'm right there at his level of playing. And I think that, you know, it's not that you just want to have that presence, and I'm really excited to let people see what it is I'm doing right now. And plus there's some crazy little ghosts that are following me around too. And me and Zach were talking about this in an interview yesterday. It was just something happening with my playing. Maybe it was the fact that I was taught by Chris almost 40 years ago, and through time maybe I developed the same way that he was when he was younger. And there's just ways I play things out that are similar to what he did. But some of the leads I used to play on tour with him, I'll pick up a guitar and play in a different spot on the neck all of a sudden. And then it sounds just like the record. I'm like, all right, I never played this lead on this spot on the neck before, nor did I even try to figure it out. What just happened? Or there'll be songs on Edge of Thorns that I never played, and I get to the lead, and I play through the lead with the record like it was me on the record, and I'm going, all right, this is creepy. It's like, what just happened? Telling Zach about it. So I think that the spirits are happy. They're going to be smiling when we go and play, you know, Paul and Chris and all the ghosts that follow us around are going to be happy. And it means so much to me. Like I said, this is such a big part of my life that it just makes me really happy to know it's back in.
I have one last question, Your Honor. even we here got to see TSO, and I saw TSO in the States, and I saw these shows, and they're like overwhelming, you know, with everything. So do you think that there's a slight pressure somehow that Savatage has to go show wise into the direction of TSO, or is it going to be completely different?
Well, I mean, funny you should ask that question. Oddly enough, my very first tour with Savatage was the Mountain King tour. And our lighting designer on that tour when I was 19 years old was Brian Hartley, who was the lighting designer for TSO, puts all that crazy stuff together. And a month and a half ago, when we got off the TSO tour, I got a message from Brian saying, I can do all the Savatage shows. So that's all I know now. I haven't seen it, but if I know Brian, then I know the TSO, you know, the powers that be and the way everybody thinks it'll be as good as it possibly can be. So I think that if you have the guy to design TSO's light shows as your light man for Savatage, there's a good chance people won't be disappointed. I think that made me feel better. I was like, ah. But, you know, again, the whole thing about that being the fact that, you know, in in 2027, it'll be 40 years since I first was on a tour bus with Brian Hartley. So it's crazy, you know, it's just time like boom. And I don't feel like 40 years has gone by. I can spend time thinking my way through them all, but it's crazy. And that's, like I said, why I think everybody knows that, you know, you have a window and the window's open. And I think we're all, you know, really, we're physically, mentally, and musically able to go out there and do this as good as we used to, and hopefully better. And that's all we're going to try to do. You know, like I said, I'm beating myself on it. I have a few goals that I want to get, you know, as far as the playing. I have a goal where I want to be like the same exact weight that I was then. You know, it's like I want to go up there and be like as good as I can be to the people that see us, so they don't go, oh, you look good, he's awfully fat, he must be eating a lot. You know, it's like, no, it's like, I don't want that one. It's like, I want to go up there and just be me, you know, a little bit older, and a lot wiser, a little bit older, and I still make mistakes, we all do, but that's because we're human beings, we're not supposed to be perfect.
No more further questions, Your Honor. Thank you very much. I'm really, really, really looking forward to this whole thing.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know we're heading over there to do some rehearsing before the tour, and I believe it's going to be in Germany. So I think, from what they're telling me. So I'm looking forward to that. I always like the food change is fun. You know, there's really good stuff there. And I always learn. I cook a lot, so I learn a lot from the caterers when I'm there. I'll walk in, I'll watch them, and they think like I'm, you know, going to complain about the food. I'm like, no, I want you to teach me what you just did. How did you make this hummus, and why is it so much better than the one I have in America? And how did you cook the steak, and why does mine never taste like? So I'll look at the cooks and I'll ask them questions. So I learn. I'm always, I'm like a ball of information, and some of it's very useful. But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great, and I can't wait to see everybody.
Nice. Well, I got to tell you one last thing. I met Paul O'Neill a couple of times, and I interviewed him, and he was the kindest person in the world that I could ever imagine. But he was the worst fucking interview partner in the world as well.
Why is that?
Those interviews took 3 or 4 hours, and I didn't.
Yeah, because Paul will do that too. He probably went off on a tangent. You never got to your questions. I used to get on the phone with Paul 3 in the morning, or whenever he'd call me or to discuss something. 2 hours later, we didn't even get to what he called about, and then he goes, "I gotta go." And I'm like, you called me to talk about something, and then you went on talking about the Chinese democracy, and then you hung the phone up 2 hours later after we were discussing the Russian Revolution. It's like...
Exactly. Yeah, it was just insane, but nice. All right. I won't keep you any longer. Thank you very much, and it was really nice talking to you.
You too. Very much. Thanks.
See you in June.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Tough Stuff, the Rock Antenna Heavy Metal Podcast. Comment, like, and follow us. For nonstop heavy metal music, check out our Rock Antenna Heavy Metal web radio stream. For more information and all podcast episodes, go to rockantenna.de/heavymetal.